Hi, how's business?
How's business?
How's business? Welcome to How's Business, a podcast on what it's like to do business in the city of Chicago, created by the Institute for Justice Clinic on Entrepreneurship. Today on How's Business, we're welcoming Eric Williams, founder of Silver Room. Silver Room is headquartered in the Hyde Park neighborhood. Could you just take it from the top? Tell me your name and the name of your business.
Sure. My name is Eric Williams. My store is called The Silver Room, also The Silver Room Block Party, also Connect Gallery, but it all comes from The Silver Room.
And for folks who have never popped into The Silver Room, what kinds of things can they expect to get there?
Oh, you're going to walk into some love, hopefully some great people, some smiles, some good music, some good smells. We sell incense and diffusers and sunglasses and t-shirts and hats and handcrafted jewelry. We have art on the wall. So a lot of different local accessories. So it's just good vibes, man. Good vibes.
And then if you could tell me from baby seedling to where it is today, how the Silver Room came to be and then how the Block Party sort of feeds into that.
Sure. So I could back up actually before I started the store. I was a finance major at UIC. And to pay for school, I started walking down the street to go to Maxwell Street. And I was buying things from the market down there and selling them to students at UIC. And so I became a street vendor. I have a degree in finance. After I graduated, I was a stockbroker for not even a year. I didn't like it. I quit and I went back to street vending and I was selling stuff on the trains and at Cubs parks and I started traveling, making t-shirts, et cetera, et cetera. Fast forward about 10 years and I opened up a retail store selling t-shirts, sunglasses, jewelry.
So what was the licensing process like for you whenever you were street vending?
Confusing and beyond confusing. Basically, the license procedure for street vending is to not allow you to street vend. So there are two main things. You can't stay in one space for too long, and you can't sell close proximity to certain kind of businesses that sell this over this. You can't sell east of the lake, north of this, west of this. Blah, blah. So at the end of the day, you can't really street peddle in places that you can actually make money. You can't sell downtown. You can't sell in business district. Like other cities where you can actually sell in high traffic areas, in Chicago, you can't. So it kind of pushed you out of the downtown area, out of the north side areas to places where there was no traffic. So it just didn't really make any sense. So after a while, the city became very aggressive against street vendors, honestly. I got arrested several times just for selling stuff on the streets, you know, and I just got to a point where I didn't have a job, but I couldn't make any money. The city made it very difficult for entrepreneurs who sold stuff outside.
It sounds like street vending was probably an important part in terms of like gathering capital or market that you needed to open a storefront. If you hadn't had that as an avenue, how would you?
There would be no Silver Room if it wasn't for me being a street peddler. I mean, that's where I learned how to buy stuff, where to buy stuff, how to market my stuff. You know, I started printing t-shirts when I was on the streets. I learned how to talk to people. I learned, you know, when you're on the street, you're exposed to everybody. So I learned about behavioral science. I mean, you name it. All that stuff came from street vending. To me, it's the purest form of sales is outside, is a market. You know, and if you look at other countries, culture is built through markets. The street vending markets are an integral part of most societies. I think we don't really see it that way. We kind of sometimes discard people selling stuff on the streets. It's like, oh, they're whatever, you know. But no, it was a big part of my personality, a big part of what I do to this day came from that. And the city actually made it very difficult to do that.
I love this idea that you're on Maxwell Street gathering goods that you think people in UIC will enjoy. Mm-hmm. How did you craft that skill set? How did you decide these are the things that the people that are going to college with me are going to want to buy?
Yeah, at the time I was selling these Bart Simpson t-shirts.
Okay.
I'm kind of dating myself. But the Simpsons had just come out and we had these Bart Simpson t-shirts. It was a picture of Homer Simpson bent over with his butt hanging out. It said crack kills. So we sold like thousands of those shirts. That was the first thing I sold, honestly. I was selling flowers for Valentine's Day and socks. Everybody needs socks. No, now selling Bulls t-shirts when they won a championship. So I did that for years and years and years.
And so now that you have a brick and mortar, what's it like to maintain a business in Chicago?
I mean, one of the issues I think with the city's codes is that people who work in the city, they're not small business owners. So they don't really understand what it takes to run a business or how to open one up. They're attorneys and they just make these laws against, you know, folks getting hurt. And I understand that. But at the same time, you make it cost prohibitive for most small business to get started. And sometimes the procedures of starting licenses, it's not like this even that expensive. It's the paperwork. For example, the PPA law is something I'm actually going to be actively trying to change. Because if you want to have somebody come in your store and play a guitar and give them $5, that's actually against the law.
Yeah, so a public place of amusement license.
Right. So that I dealt with that a lot when I used to have a restaurant in 2001. It was called Square One. And we just wanted a place for folks to come and play music and sing, and you couldn't even charge $5. It's against the law. And to get the license, it could take you years. And there's no real clear ending point on when it's over with or how to get it, or it's just too cumbersome. And so the city, we talk about arts and culture, they need to ease up the license procedure to create more arts and culture. That's a direct correlation between that. This guy I met after Hurricane Katrina, it was a band that came to Chicago. They thought, heard Chicago, you know, blues and jazz. They wanted to set up shop and play here. Because of the PPA license, they couldn't find a place to play. They wound up moving to Las Vegas. That was a great band that could have been here. So the cumbersome problems of trying to start license here is a big deal.
I want to focus a little bit on the Silver Room Block Club mm-hmm. party. I know it's a huge deal here mm-hmm. in Hyde Park. So you're not just a curator of goods in your store, you're also a curator in this sense. Tell us more about that party.
Well, I started street peddling, I said, in 1989, but I started DJing in 1985. So I was a DJ for many years. And my father had a bar, and I've always been around arts and culture and music. So when I opened the store up, it was like this collision between music, arts, and culture, and then this retail thing. So the block party was really just a response to lack of diversity in some of the other street festivals on the north side of Chicago. So I started off with some friends of mine playing and some folks doing murals on the side of the wall. It was super small. It was a few hundred people. That started 16 years ago in Wicker Park. And it just kind of grew, you know, and just grew and grew and grew. Now we've 40,000 people. So it grew over the last 16 years. But again, just a response to lack of inclusion in some of the other festivals.
What did it mean to you to move that festival from Wicker Park down to Hyde Park?
You know, I didn't really think about how this city is so segregated. I mean, we know it is, but to see it when I moved down here is like, wow, people didn't even know we even existed for 17 years we've been open, because folks stay in Hyde Park or folks stay in Wicker Park, you know? Mm-hmm. So coming down here, it was embraced like big time, you know, and that was really nice to see how people really appreciated the block party and what it meant to have this in the community of Hyde Park. So it's great. I mean, it's grown, just doubled every year we've been down here.
And what does it mean to you? I mean, we hear all the time that people are leaving Chicago for a variety of reasons.
Right.
How important is it to you that your business is here?
Right. I mean, it's very important. You talk about, you know, people leaving Chicago. From where are they leaving? South side, west side. You know, downtown actually is growing population right now. Downtown and north side, you know. So you have black Chicagoans leaving the south side. So I forgot the number, but since 2004, it's a couple hundred thousand people. It's a lot of people, you know. Mm-hmm. So arts and culture is a big part of why people move to certain neighborhoods. So to have this be a very integral part of the south side of Chicago, and people know that they have a place to come and have a good time and commune and meet friends and family, is really important to shore up some of the fabric that's already here. But to have this joyful day is really important.
Mm-hmm. Really important. Not to have a bunch of licenses that are required.
Well, no, there is licenses for the block party,
yeah,
too,
sure.
Actually.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, you have to go through a procedure, which, I mean, you know, some of it I totally get. Don't get me wrong. I totally get you have to have some sort of like rite of passage to get this. You can't just throw a big party on the street without anybody knowing about it. So, you know, it's connecting with, you know, the alderman and the police department and signing off with the fire department and the Department of Cultural Affairs and then the traffic, you know. So it's different departments, you know, kind of coming together. It's a bit cumbersome. I mean, it's an expense that's involved, but, you know, it is what it is, you know. So even the fact that we have these street events and you can't technically charge money on the street. So I think some of the city laws, I understand the intent, but the execution of them, they don't make sense in a way, because these are people who don't do those events. They just slap on this one size fits all law without really looking at how it's actually to be executed, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's more the issue.
And you have a huge impact on the community that you exist in. When you set out to do this, what kind of impact were you hoping for?
This economic impact, for sure, because you bring, you know, 40,000 folks to a neighborhood, they're going to spend money with the community. So, you know, we have studies we've done on this right now. So we have 100 vendors. They all make money. We have the surrounding restaurants. They all make money, you know, because they make money. Two, that's tax revenue. One is tax revenue. And then two, it actually just kind of brings goodwill to the community. People talk about Hyde Park or Wicker Park in different ways. So street festivals are very, very important. I mean, we lived through really, really bad winters in Chicago for the summers. And the street festivals are a very important part of the summer. So I look at it as, you know, it's the impact of, you know, for the economy and also the culture.
Yeah, I'm a Logan Squareite, so I happened to walk past the Silver Room pop-up in mm-hmm. Wicker Park recently.
Yeah.
So you guys are branching out into that model as mm-hmm. well. How has it gone? And I know that pop-up license is relatively new in the city.
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, I can be critical, but I can also say some good things. That's actually a really good thing that they've done. It's super easy. I went and got one. It was super cheap. $25-$50, whatever it was, and get it in one day. And that's a great way to spur business. So you don't have to commit to a long-term lease, which was a problem before. You actually had to show a lease before you can get the license. Now you just can go get a license. So it's great. Kudos for doing that.
Yeah. In an old furniture store that closed down. So a gigantic space. And it's a shame to have that.
It's 5,000 square feet. Right. And then from the, from the side of the landlord, they can, have somebody in their space on a temporary basis without having to commit to them either. So that has long-term effects. So these little small things can mean a lot. And when you do as an incubation model for a space, that could lead to some long-term business. Not just me. I mean, obviously we've been established, but there's other folks who can try something out and not feel like they have to commit to a year or two or a commercial lease, which is 5 or 10 years, Mm-hmm. So it's great. It's good.
If you could give advice to an entrepreneur who's still on the street peddling level about persevering, making it through to where you are today, what would that piece of advice be?
Not to be cliche, but don't give up. Try and have a little bit of a plan, a 6-month plan, a 3-month plan, a 1-year plan, a 5-year plan. I mean, when I was on the streets, I was selling, mostly t-shirts and socks and sunglasses and some jewelry too. But I had 3 products that everybody liked, to buy, honestly. I started traveling. I mean, I approached my street peddling business like it was a business. It was a business, honestly. Actually, I did pretty well, doing that. So don't feel like you are less than because you're on the street. I was just outside, I didn't see any different, honestly, And also expand just the street peddling. What else can you do besides just that? Have multiple streams of income.
And what advice would you have for City Hall about trying to improve things for other maybe street peddlers who are on their way up?
I would say definitely have it be a collaboration with street vendors. Listen to what people are trying to say, because what I felt like is all the big box stores and the big box businesses can impose their will on what they want, to see happen in the city. And you have small business owners are just as important, if not more important. People actually like the street vendors. They added culture to the community. It's an asset to the community. So listen to what people on the streets are saying. Listen to what your community is saying. They can kind of help guide and craft different kinds of laws. We can shape laws together that make sense, that still ensure public safety, but also gives the retailer and entrepreneur leeway to have a viable business.
And if you could use one word to describe what it's like to do business in the city, what would that one word be?
Exhilarating.
Exhilarating.
It's fun. I mean, I don't know. I haven't had a job since I was 21 years old. I've been self-employed and, end of the day, it's fun. You get to meet great people and city is very vibrant. It's very diverse. I mean, I feel like even at the end of the day, the barriers to entry in Chicago are still a lot less than other places. You can make things happen here, And I just feel like if you have an idea, a dream, and a little bit of money, you can make something happen.
And before we wrap, is there anything that's important for you to share about Silver Room or about doing business in the city?
Well, it's been 21 years. I've had my ups and downs like every business. You have to have a mindset that you're in this for the long term. Working with the city is not always easy. Things could be streamlined for sure. Information could be parsed out a lot better. Like the pop-up license, I happened to hear about it through somebody randomly. What are the modes of information that the city's putting out and who's getting information? So I think that's something I would like to see change. Just, get rid of some of the cumbersome laws. The PPA license is a huge thing. We need to really change that. But yeah, I would say that the fee structures in general are not that bad. I mean, a business license, it's not that bad. So for me, again, it's not necessarily the fees, it's the red tape. I wish that would be alleviated a little bit.
Since 1998, the Institute for Justice Clinic on Entrepreneurship has provided free legal assistance, support, and advocacy for low-income entrepreneurs in Chicago. The IJ Clinic also trains University of Chicago law students to be vigorous and creative advocates for entrepreneurs. For more information, visit www.housebusinessshy.com.